Flanagan's Ecologic, Big and Bold Green Steps, Tasmania's 200% renewable target. Tasmania recently announced a 200% renewable energy target by 2040, doubling the island state's hydro, wind, and solar energy production, with the goal of being Australia's renewable energy powerhouse, looking well past its 100% renewable energy target by 2022. The island state is located 150 miles south of the Australian mainland, separated by the Bass Strait. It is made up of the main island, the 26th largest island in the world, and 334 surrounding islands. It has a proud history of being a quiet leader on climate action and is building a second interconnector to the mainland to enable export of power from its wind farms. Thanks to pumped hydro energy storage, Tasmania aims to be the battery of the Australian nation. Its Renewable Hydrogen Action Plan calls for a renewably powered hydrogen generation facility to be up and running by 2024 and to be ready for commercial export hydrogen by 2030. This will create hundreds of local jobs and inject billions into the Tasmanian economy. New parks in Chile. Chilean President Michelle Bachelet is establishing a legacy. In 2015, she established two marine sanctuaries covering 350,000 square miles. More recently, she's established five national parks spanning more than 10 million acres, a swath of territory as big as Switzerland. This was catalyzed by a million-acre gift from a famous eco-couple, Doug Tompkins, the founder of North Face, who died in 2015, and his wife, Christina McDivitt Tompkins, the former CEO of Patagonia. The Tompkins worked to rewild much land that had been degraded by industrial practices, but not without controversy. Opposition came from farmers, ranchers, and fish farming. Proponents have successfully advocated the value for tourism and profitable economic development for the long term. The Tompkins also gifted 1.5 million acres of land in neighboring Argentina. Microsoft's leadership. In January, Microsoft, citing the fact that human activity has released more than 2 trillion metric tons of greenhouse gases into the Earth's atmosphere since the start of the first industrial revolution in the mid-1700s, and the fact that humanity continues to pump more than 50 billion metric tons of GHGs into the atmosphere each year, announced a bold plan to be carbon negative by 2030. In an official message, Microsoft noted that those of us that can afford to move faster and go further should do so. Thus, the company announced its plan to reduce and ultimately remove Microsoft's carbon footprint. By 2030, Microsoft will be carbon negative, and by 2050, it will have removed from the environment all the carbon that it has emitted either directly or by electrical consumption since it was founded in 1975, including its supply chain emissions. Microsoft has established a $1 billion climate innovation fund to accelerate the global development of carbon reduction, capture, and removal technologies. Progress will be published in an annual environmental sustainability report that will detail Microsoft's carbon impact and reduction journey. The journey includes downstream emissions, empowering customers too, helping them to reduce their footprint thanks to Microsoft's sustainability calculator. 8 billion trees. In November of 2018, two young men, Michael Powell and John Chambers, founded a movement called 8 billion trees. Their impetus was to preserve habitat for animals and plants in the world's most diverse ecosystem. Their organization is focused on saving habitat for orangutans in Indonesia, lemurs in Madagascar, sloths in Brazil, and so many more. Half of the world's trees have disappeared in the past 100 years. The Nature Climate Change Society estimates that Earth will lose over half of the planet's forests by 2050 at the rate we are going, with devastating losses of biodiversity. 8 million trees is clear on the multiple benefits of trees for global health. It considers trees the superheroes of the planet. Each second, trees remove 200 tons of CO2 from the environment. 8 billion trees goal is in its name. The results so far are impressive. It has planted over 1 million trees through its support of full-scale planting operations in 19 countries. It has protected around 25 million trees, and the founders can be proud of saving countless animals. An acre of tree absorbs 6 tons of CO2. While reigniting natural water cycles, mitigating the spread of deserts, revitalizing unused areas into fertile farmlands and woods. In developed countries, the average person creates 10 to 20 tons of CO2 each year. Thus, it takes 4 to 8 acres of trees to offset each individual's footprint, some 400 to 4,000 trees per person. To my surprise, 8 Billion Trees is headquartered in Las Vegas, Nevada. To donate and be part of its solution, please visit 8billiontrees.com. The Urban Drawdown Initiative. The Urban Drawdown Initiative was inspired by Paul Hawkins' book, Drawdown. In 2017, a group of cities began exploring the role of cities in carbon drawdown. Working with the Urban Sustainability Directors Network and the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance, cities began developing innovative solutions to draw down carbon emissions, creating a framework and a set of action pathways supported by a resource database. One of the pathways by which cities and counties are drawing down carbon is by putting it back in the soil. Cities own land. Boulder County, Colorado, has more than 75,000 acres of open space. San Francisco owns rangeland in its watershed, plus power and water rights of way that are suitable for treatment with compost to achieve additional sequestration. It has collected over 2 million tons of organics and produced over 700,000 tons of carbon-absorbing compost. Cities like Stockholm, Helsinki, and Amsterdam are linking biomass resources to community-based bioenergy and biochar systems that accelerate sequestration. These are exciting developments, new means for society to cut emissions and reach the Paris Accords goals. Craig Ebert of Climate Action Reserve notes over a Whole Foods lunch that a new class of soil-based carbon solutions, what he calls natural working land solutions, provide great promise of major contributions in achieving global greenhouse gas reduction targets. Logic, crafting a safe and sustainable post-COVID world. Twisted is the environmental news. There were no Earth Day 50 gatherings this year, except online. April 22nd came and went. But the news and social media brings us stunning images of wildlife on the Yosemite Valley floor. Fantastic sea turtle populations. Whales have been freed of incessant low-frequency sounds of freighters now less traveled. Italians can now see fish in the canals of Venice. A sunken ship laying on its side is visible from the air due to the calm in the Great Lakes. So many magical images of our clean environment given the eerie and painful shutdown of our economy. The freeway maps of LA are all green, no traffic. People are walking and biking in their neighborhoods. Clear skies in Beirut, large Chinese coal plants toggle down 60%. Certain parts of India can now see the snow-capped Himalayas for the first time in years. The International Energy Agency projected in March that global energy demand for the year will drop by 6%, and greenhouse gas emissions are slated to fall by 8% to their lowest level since 2010 and the largest drop in history. The anticipated 8% drop in oil use is the biggest decline since World War II. Our cities have been able to take a breath of fresh air. Nitrous oxide's down over 50% in Madrid, Paris, and other large cities. A boon for the environment. Habitat is relaxed. Animals have more room to roam. Herds of deer in Japanese neighborhoods, monkeys loiter in New Delhi, wild turkeys in now abandoned playgrounds in Oakland. There are wild mountain goats in Wales. Some think that at long last the pandas in a Chinese zoo consummated their relationship, possibly thanks to the lack of ogling zoo visitors. Some experts believe that humans have had a lot to do with the pandemic. Rampant deforestation, uncontrolled expansion of agriculture, intensive farming, mining, and infrastructure development, as well as exploitation of wild species, have created a perfect storm for the spillover of disease from wildlife to people, is one explanation. New Zealand's leaders are now preparing to spend $1 billion on nature, working to build thriving forests and wetlands to avoid future pest control costs. The most optimistic vision of our recovery from COVID-19 is that we not only gain control of the pandemic and our health, but that we take the best of the shutdown and make it long-term. As individuals, we want the clean air, the clean water, the uncongested freeways. We need adequate hospital capacity with American-made PPE. We buy local, we eat local, we support local restaurants. We telecommute and drive less. We Zoom and WebEx more. Flights become a privilege rather than a weekly right. We reach out to old friends and honor family more. We play more music. We cook more. We value more the process of making art and cherishing friends. The United States must regain its leadership position with climate protection, promoting entrepreneurship, innovation, and collaboration like war efforts of the past. The war on carbon must not take a back seat to the pandemic. Deva Shri Saha of the World Resources Institute is quoted above. We cannot miss this chance to recover from the pandemic in ways that make sense, in ways that are strategic, putting low carbon sector jobs at the forefront. More focus on energy efficiency that creates jobs and savings. More public transportation. We need to modernize the electric grid to make storage real. And we need massive tree restoration, support for wind farms and electric vehicles. Let's rebuild for resilience, health, and well-being. Let's be the change agents. While we recover, we must promote change through policies and leadership and community action, doubling down on climate protection and equity. Just as we are bound together to fight the coronavirus, we must be bound together to aggressively address the very real threat of climate change that could kill millions of global citizens, destroying the quality of life we cherish and causing economic impacts larger than COVID-19. An article with terrific images and simple messaging was done by Vox Media in its December 2019 piece titled, "These Three Trees Can Protect Us from Climate Collapse." The research is well done. The article, a powerful communication supported by the Pulitzer Center. The authors travel to locations in Brazil, Indonesia, and Democratic Republic of Congo to document these species. These countries have the largest percentage of tropical forests within their borders, as well as the highest rates of deforestation. The Brazil nut tree, Bertholletia excelsa, is enormous, the height of 14-story buildings. These trees channel up to 260 gallons of water each day from soil to sky, through their roots, up their trunks, and out through their leaves. They cause the rainforest to rain. The Amazon rainforest covers 8 countries, and its trees pump massive amounts of water into the atmosphere. At times, there is more water in the air above the Amazon rainforest than there is water in the 4,000-mile Amazon River. The Brazil nut tree is threatened by soy farmers, cattle ranchers, and miners destroying the forests. A second super tree is the Indonesian stilt mangrove, Rhizophora, that lives in the tides. Its roots are rinsed daily by briny water. Indonesia has 23% of the world's mangroves, an area the size of Belgium. In addition to coastal protection, habitat protection for small fish, these mangroves absorb 5 to 10 times as much CO2 per acre as rainforests. As their leaves fall, get caught in wet soil, they are trapped and form blue carbon, underground storage of carbon up to 10 feet deep. Given this unusually productive carbon capture, the preservation and restoration of mangroves is considered a promising negative emissions technology, NET. The third tree featured is the Aphromosia, the African teak tree that lives in the Congo Basin, the world's second largest rainforest, covering 6 countries. These trees are huge carbon sinks, grow rapidly while serving as the forest caretakers. They provide food in the form of unripe seed pods for monkeys and birds and shade for other flora and fauna. Their bark is flame resistant. Given demand for their wood for yachts and for flooring in the United States, Europe, and China, described as an insatiable appetite, they've gone extinct in several countries. 3. On April 16th, Sweden announced it has officially closed its last coal-fired power plant, 2 years ahead of its 2022 pledge, and joined Belgium 2016 and Austria 2020 as the trio of European countries that are now coal-free. The Swedish government's announcement followed Stockholm Energy's decision to permanently close its last coal plant. The utility has shuttered its last boiler there given the mild winter. The plant's closure will halve its utility emissions from around 900,000 tons to 441,000 tons. Six other European countries have pledged to eliminate coal-fired power production by 2025. France, Slovakia, Portugal, United Kingdom, Ireland, and Italy. Five more countries will be coal-free by 2030. Germany, the world's number one producer of brown lignite coal, pledged to do so by 2038. Meanwhile, big progress to going coal-free is being made stateside. Partly due to the pandemic, renewables are producing more power than coal for the first time ever. That's unthinkable. A decade ago, coal was the nation's baseload power source, providing about 50% of our country's requirement. In the first 4.5 months of 2020, America's wind turbines, solar panels, and hydroelectric dams produced more electricity than coal on 90 separate days, shattering last year's 38-day count. On May 1st in Texas, wind produced three times as much power as coal. In the United States, wind prices are down 40% in a decade, solar 80%. Fracking for natural gas has cut gas costs, making coal all the more uncompetitive in the markets. American utilities have closed hundreds of coal plants in this decade. Coal is expected to drop 25% this year, providing 19% of the nation's power in 2020, less than renewables. General Electric's green pivot. General Electric announced on September 21st that it will no longer build coal-fired power plants. GE Senior Vice President Russell Stokes noted that, "With the continued transformation of GE, we are focused on power generation businesses that have attractive economics and a growth trajectory." Good timing. A day after announcing that it would get out of the coal power business, GE announced that it has been chosen to supply turbines for what will be the world's largest offshore wind farm. The Dogger Bank A and B wind farm will use 190 Haliade X13, 13 megawatt turbines. The wind farm's first two phases will have a capacity of 2.4 gigawatts. This is the first use of the Haliade X13, a massive machine. GE notes that one spin of its blades can generate enough electricity to power a UK household for more than 2 days. Walmart's regeneration. Zero net is a buzzword term in the energy and environmental worlds. The goal is to cut carbon, to cut waste, and to promote clean and healthy communities. Regeneration takes it a step further. It inherently recognizes that things need to be fixed: our air, forests, oceans, rivers, lakes. In fact, many ecosystems need to be restored after being taxed and abused. We need to actively clean our communities, our waterways, our air. Companies need to rethink the way they do business, and in cases, their businesses. To be sustainable, it's not just about zeroing out our current impact, but instead it's about regenerating healthy ecosystems. And in this regard, a new Walmart announcement put it in the spotlight. With 11,500 stores in 27 countries, and fiscal year revenues of $524 billion in 2020, this guerrilla retailer is leading corporate America in its commitments and directions. Some of the commitment headlines. Walmart is committed to zero emissions by 2040. It is committed to restoring 50 million acres of land and 1 million square miles of ocean by 2030. It's the corporate commitment to leadership that is perhaps most exciting. We want to play an important role in transforming the world's supply chains to be regenerative. The company is looking beyond decarbonizing its global operations. It is on a path to be regenerative, one that works to restore, renew, and replenish, and encourages others to do the same. Our vision at Walmart is to help transform food and product supply chains to be regenerative, working in harmony with nature to protect, restore, and sustainably use our natural resources. Walmart, based in Bentonville, Arkansas, now claims 15 years of sustainability leadership to help combat the cascading loss of nature threatening the planet. It has a commitment to 100% renewable power by 2035 with wind, solar, and other renewables, electrifying all vehicles, including long-haul trucks by 2040, using nothing but low-impact refrigerants, and electrification for heating in stores, clubs, data, and distribution centers by 2040. The regenerative efforts are impressive. Walmart will continue its efforts to preserve at least 1 acre of natural habitat for every acre of land developed by the company in the United States. It is driving adoption of regenerative agricultural practices, sustainable fisheries, and forest protection and restoration. It is investing in and working with suppliers to source from place-based efforts that help preserve natural ecosystems and improve livelihoods. To date, Walmart powers 29% of its operations with renewable energy and diverts 80% of its waste from landfills and incineration globally. It is also working with its suppliers. The Gigaton Project's goal is to avoid a gigaton of greenhouse gases by 2030. So far, more than 2,300 suppliers have signed on. Since 2017, and in aggregate, they have registered 230 million metric tons of avoided emissions. California to ban gas-powered cars. The executive order makes sense as the state of California is on fire. Furthermore, transportation accounts for 50% of all greenhouse gas emissions in California. A clear indication of climate change, the ominous fires are threatening our health and livelihoods. Nearly every Californian is breathing bad air, a very sharp and personally invasive reminder of nature's fury. California Governor Gavin Newsom's executive order curbs the sale of new gasoline and diesel-powered automobiles and passenger trucks by 2035. That target is anticipated to achieve more than a 35% reduction in greenhouse gases and an 80% improvement in nitrous oxide emissions. Concurrently, the California Air Resources Board, CARB, will develop regulations for medium and heavy-duty vehicles to be emissions-free by 2045. 2035 for drayage trucks, defined as shipping goods short distance, e.g. from port to rail terminal. Newsom noted that cars shouldn't melt glaciers or raise sea levels, threatening our cherished beaches and coastlines. China's carbon neutrality commitment. On September 22nd, at the United Nations General Assembly, China's President Xi Jinping announced the country's goal to achieve carbon neutrality before 2060. By itself, it could lower the projected global temperatures by the year 2100 by as much as 0.2 to 0.3 degrees centigrade. Currently, China accounts for nearly half of all global coal demand. It continues building coal-fired power plants, but Bloomberg Energy News reports that this era is quickly coming to an end. China's announcement is likely good politics as well as good policy. Unlike America, that is an oil and gas net exporter, China is a net importer. In recent years, China has become the global powerhouse in the renewable space. China now produces 2/3 of the world's solar panels and lithium-ion batteries, and 45% of all wind turbines. Experts believe that the top-down nature of Chinese government structure and policies developed by the National Development and Reform Commission bodes well for implementing aggressive climate targets. China's commitment to carbon neutrality will indeed be a game changer if its policy is realized with action. The country's commitment follows a 2015 commitment to peak its emissions by 2030. Analysts believe this peak may actually occur in the next 5 years and ahead of schedule, given China's rapid urbanization and the fact that cities are far less greenhouse gas intensive than rural areas. Flanagan's EcoLogic, LBJ's Climate Briefing. Dr. David Orr of Oberlin College turned to history the other day in a UCLA presentation. He pointed to the reality that America has been aware of the imminent threat of climate change since the days of Lyndon B. Johnson, President of the United States from 1963 to 1969. It was during his presidency that our federal government was first warned about the climate threat, that it could become an existential threat, potentially more devastating than nuclear weapons.
or drilled home this point. America has had more than a half century to make real changes and to protect our country from the threat of climate change, from the events that we are now experiencing in fire, flood, hurricane, and tornadic activity in increasing frequency and ferocity. Or pride with force. Why didn't we act sooner? We could have reacted a long time ago. Now this is a 5-alarm fire. In terms of our atmosphere, we are passing a dysfunctional planet to our children. Does our freedom include the right to pollute the commons? Would America's founding fathers have crafted a different constitution if they had had even a basic understanding of earth sciences? These insights from a UCLA, Luskin, and Burkle Center webinar, The National Security Imperative for Climate Action. There is no question about the threat of climate change. The science is irrefutable, says U.S. Navy Admiral William Fallon, now retired after a career that literally spanned the globe. Speaking optimistically, we're cutting a climate recovery pretty darn close. Keeping the average global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees C above pre-industrial levels is going to be monumental. We need to get there, and fast. We've already given up 1 degree. At 2 degrees, all bets are off on what our life on Earth will look like. 3 to 4 degrees of average global temperature rise would be intolerable, setting off a series of cascading and devastating events, floods, fires, food and water shortages, pandemics, economic and government collapse. There are many reasons that the United States and other industrialized nations did not take action to protect our climate. There was no plan B for the chance, now the reality, that the atmospheric scientists led by James Hansen were right. This is a threat of grotesque proportion. So, we are penalized for inaction, a half century of inaction on a threat potentially greater than the wrath of the use of nuclear weaponry. Phew. Deep breaths. Darn it. This indeed was on the radar a long time ago. There is little point looking in the rearview mirror. Instead, it's time for accelerated action. It's surge time for your own well-being and for the well-being of the planet. Good news, the pace of clean energy development is impressive. The progress is palpable and contagious. That's what Econet is all about, flagging and highlighting solutions, especially scalable solutions that make economic and environmental sense, fueling the invisible fires of ecologic. Oregon is now coal-free. In mid-October, Portland General Electric announced that it had permanently closed its Boardman plant, the last of Oregon's coal-fired capacity. An agreement was reached between PGE and other stakeholders in 2010 to retire the plant 20 years ahead of schedule. Thus, the utility and its partner, Idaho Power, that owned 10% of the plant, have been planning on the closure for years. The 550-megawatt plant was the single largest source of greenhouse gases in Oregon. While not a one-for-one replacement, PGE is investing in 300 megawatts of wind and purchasing the output of a 50 megawatts of solar, augmented with 30 megawatts of storage from NextEra from a location near the shuttered Boardman plant in Morrow County. This transition from coal to renewables speaks to the public policy, but also the low cost of renewables. The International Energy Agency reports that for the first time in history, solar is cheaper than fossil fuels for power generation. On average, solar is now the cheapest form of electricity for utilities to build. The report flags the regional cost of capital as an important determinant of solar viability, 2.6 to 5% interest rates for solar in Europe and the United States, 4.4 to 5.5% in China, and 8.8 to 10% in India. As investors are confident in the technology and regional stability, lower interest rates will drop and drive further solar development. The swift and fair energy transition. The role of community choice aggregators has quickly expanded from a green commodity buyer to social benefit companies, providing energy resiliency and equitable jobs in the communities they serve. Now a global perspective provided by a Rocky Mountain Institute webinar moderated by James Newcomb, aligning toward a renewable economy for a swift and fair energy transition. Put the plight of equitable jobs and opportunities in the clean energy transition in the fore. Newcomb welcomes all and lays it on the line. there has been and continues to be a lingering perception that a clean energy economy will burden global economies. But no, he cites data that shows far more jobs in clean energy. They are growing fast and creating sustained jobs in our society. The World Energy Outlook of the International Energy Agency, IEA, presents a sustainable development scenario, nearly Paris compliant, that projects that there could be 27 million clean energy jobs in the next 3 years, while preventing 12 million deaths related to asthma and other respiratory diseases exacerbated by fossil fuel emissions. Another study by IRENA, the International Renewable Energy Agency, projects that 2 to 7 million jobs will be lost in the fossil fuel industries by 2030, and 38 to 60 million new jobs in clean energy. There are already 3 times as many clean energy jobs in the United States as there are fossil fuel jobs. Panelist and RMI principal Jacob Corbidai posited a discussion with his son. So, do you want a job in the fading fossil fuel industry or the booming solar industry? The choice is pretty obvious. The pandemic has hit the fossil fuel industry really hard, so hard that it may never recover. A Deloitte study notes that of the 107 oil and gas jobs lost in the pandemic, as many as 70% may be permanently lost. Newcomb noted that the year 2019 may be oil and gas's peak year. Meanwhile, the clean energy industry will rebound quickly. The challenge and opportunity is for the public and private sectors to come together to strategically chart a sound, clean energy course. A big part of this involves jobs and equity. Corbidai discussed jobs in inner cities and creating a just transition to a clean energy economy. How can small, disadvantaged businesses participate? Corbidai said that it will take policies to make it happen. In Boston, RMI is working in collaboration with the Emerald Cities Collective to promote means for minority-owned contractors to access the pipeline of public sector work, providing normally underrepresented companies with good-paying jobs. This is doing development differently. He talked about Detroit and its community benefit agreements, creating opportunities and addressing the structural injustices. New York's Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act requires that 35% of its funds are targeted into disadvantaged communities. Panelist Sharon Burrow Leslie began by making it clear that the post-pandemic recovery will need to be both in social and environmental balance. Due to the pandemic, 500 million jobs have been lost around the world. There is both a climate and a health emergency at hand. Furthermore, Leslie noted that there has been an erosion of trust in democracy. A recent study shows that less than 45% of young people trust democracy. Given social unrest, Leslie said that we need to rebuild the public's trust through transparency and accountability. There needs to be a just transition to our clean energy future. The European Union has plans for recovery that have a social pillar based on a Green New Deal and cutting supply chain exploitation. Martin Luther King was quoted that we need leaders not in love with money, but in love with justice. If the recovery is just about money, we fail the planet. We can't have justice. Yet there has been an explosion of global monopoly power and profits during the pandemic. Just as there have been huge corporate gains and unconditional public subsidies of corporations, there has been marked social unrest, and Leslie predicts that there will be more unless justice is served. The times are indeed unprecedented, but they are predictable. The pandemic was predictable. So are the effects of climate change. So is the civil unrest. Now we need policies to support a clean, just energy future. Yes, we need zero net energy. We also need zero net job loss. We cannot rebuild the global economy if people don't have jobs and income. Every job lost must be replaced with new jobs. How can there be a just transition to a clean energy economy? Capitalism does have the brilliant merit of self-organizing, but it has inherent flaws. There needs to be means to address justice and equity within a capitalist society and in the transition to a sustainable future. Externalities can be no longer. This RMI webinar made clear that we have the challenge and opportunity to meet both our social and climate objectives together. Jobs are a fundamental aspect of the recovery we all crave. We redefine the rules. We cannot prescribe the status quo. United Kingdom to outpace California. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has recently proclaimed that the United Kingdom will cut its greenhouse gas emissions further and faster than any other major economy in the next decade, outpacing California. The UK's new target reduction will be 68% in annual carbon emissions by 2030 compared to 1990 levels, a significant increase from the 57% previous target. In California, 10 years after the infamous AB 32 Global Warming Solutions Act, SB 32 ratcheted up the greenhouse reduction target to 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. The Prime Minister's announcement, just days before he was slated to co-host a virtual planning meeting for COP26, is intended to galvanize other nations to follow suit. The UK will host COP26, the United Nations' 26th annual conference of parties addressing global climate change in Glasgow in November of 2021. Countries that signed on to the Paris Agreement pledged to set NDCs, nationally declared contributions. Countries are responsible for setting their own NDCs, specific plans to cut emissions. The UK announcement was in part spurred by the finding by the UK's Committee on Climate Change that the cost of cutting emissions has fallen rapidly in the past few years. Denmark stops North Sea oil exploration. Since the 1970s, and despite its cutting-edge climate protection policies and action, Denmark has been earning billions of dollars in revenues from pumping North Sea oil. It is currently the European Union's largest oil producer, a distinction made possible by Brexit and the fact that Norway is not a member of the EU. Now Denmark has taken a landmark step, announcing that it will end all new oil and gas exploration in the North Sea. The oil industry response to a recent tender, the country's 8th licensing round of new exploration rights in the North Sea issued by the Danish government, was tepid, partially due to low oil prices and the North Sea's high costs of extraction. After the lackluster industry response, the government canceled the solicitation as well as all future explorations. The move was praised by Greenpeace Denmark. The country has been producing 103,000 barrels a day in 2019, with 55 drilling platforms in its territory across 20 oil and gas fields. Danish officials are now urging the United Kingdom to follow suit, suggesting that to be credible in the climate space, that North Sea exploration has to stop. Protecting the Arctic. TD Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank, announced that it will no longer fund oil and gas-related activities in the Arctic Circle. It is joining a number of major global lenders in taking similar action to protect the Arctic's fragile ecosystem by cutting off funding for environmentally detrimental projects. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and Morgan Stanley have all committed to ending fossil fuel financing in the Arctic. The Toronto-based TD Bank stated in its official announcement that the Arctic Circle is warming faster than the rest of the planet, which in turn poses the risk of increased greenhouse gas releases and further warming. Last month, Canada's biggest lender, Royal Bank of Canada, became the first Canadian bank to say that it will not directly finance exploration or development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It also put limits on financing for clients with significant coal mining operations.